The two best asset classes are real estate and business. It's the one place the government won't tap into. I mean, we're even having talks right now that they're going to try to really tax the Roth IRAs or even prevent you from ever using a Roth IRA.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And again, for the second time, we got Chris Miles on the show, The Money Show.
The Chris Miles Money Show.
Yep. Yeah, The Chris Miles Money Show. Listen to his podcast. He's got like over 500 episodes. Mm-hmm. Something like that, right? I was looking at it the other day. I'm like, holy smokes, he's like at 580. I don't even know what number. Almost,
yeah, about 550. Yeah.
Yeah, 550. Okay. So he's got a lot of episodes out there. So any kind of question you guys can imagine that he's been asked, it is on his show. And today we're going to talk about his podcast. He has a secret checklist that he uses when he's going to do some passive investing. And he's going to share a couple of the questions on that. That one is reserved for his clients. So I appreciate him sharing a couple of those. And we might hit a couple of other items, but let's see how we are doing in time. But Chris, I'm going to go ahead and let you introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah. So either those of you don't remember me or you haven't been following the show for more than like about 6 months or so, Chris Miles, I'm an anti-financial advisor, right? So, you know, pretty much that means I think the stock market sucks. If we're going to get naked truth about that, right?
That's right.
Is mutual funds, high risk, mediocre returns. The real return of the stock market for the last 30 years with the biggest upswing we've had in history, which has been the last now going on 13 years of uptrend, has still only been averaging 8.4% for the last 30 years. And that's with 13 years straight up. So that's the kind of thing that I try to teach people is, hey, you're taking high risk at mediocre returns. Let's get out of the market. Let's get more into alternative investments, things like real estate investing, you know, or it can even be like oil and gas. It could be, you know, franchises. But typically, if you look outside of the mainstream, outside of the norm, you've got a much better chance of success than following the mainstream who are broke financially. Even if they've been saving their 401ks, getting the match and the IRAs and everything else, they're still not becoming financially free. So, I was a traditional financial advisor until 2006 when I bailed out. I realized it was crap and nobody becomes financially free. I was able to retire myself, become financially independent by the summer of 2006 when I was almost 29. Went through the recession, became an upside down millionaire where I was over $1 million in debt because of some mistakes I made during that time. And had to battle my way back out, avoided bankruptcy, but battled my way back out and was able to become financially independent the second time at the end of 2016 when I was 39. And that's what I've been doing ever since, been teaching and trying to lead and guide people to, you know, create that financial freedom today, not 30 or 40 years from now, so they can work because they want to, not because they have to.
All right. So you said 30 years, 8.4%. That's what I heard, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And that's not counting like inflation, right? Minus inflation.
That's right. That's just purely S&P 500 average. And I talk about the actual yield because some people say, Chris, actually, it's been 2009. It's been going up. So that's only 12 years. Like, well, yeah, I get that. But if you count 2009 as an up year, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, you go up to 21, that's 13 years in a row of upswing is what I'm referring to, right? But many people will talk about the averages. They'll say the average return of the market's 10 or 12%, right? And the problem with that is that average is not actual because, for example, you lose half your money, that's minus 50%. But to get back to breaking the even, it's not 50% you have to get 100% return after that 50% loss. You do the average over 2 years, minus 50 plus 100 is 50 divided by 2 years, 25% average return. But it's not the actual yield, that's 0% or a little bit less. They charge you fees. So you really have $97,000 after having 100 grand a couple of years ago, right? And you still somehow got a 25% average return. And that's what people noticed. Anybody who's been investing since at least Y2K, you know, since the last, you know, before the 2000s, already know they're saying, wait a minute, 2000, it took me until really 2015 or 16 to actually have the same amount of money that I have today. And that's because even though the average at that time was right around 3-4%, the actual was zero. So it's big. It's a big difference. But it makes it makes a massive difference. I mean,
and then you also, you know, some people got to pay taxes on that too.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And people say, well, Chris, I get the match with my 401k. And I tell people that's a myth, because that match, you know, even, and I actually showed on my podcast recently where there's that myth of the match, right? That somebody who, even if they get 100% match, it's not 100% return. If you save $6,000 a year and you say you made 107%, 7% for the market, 100% for the match, you know that after 40 years, $6,000 a year will turn into $50 quadrillion.
Wow.
And I guarantee no one has saved enough in their 401k in the last 40 years to have $50 quadrillion, right?
I didn't even know that was a word.
Yeah, I know. I had to count. I had to count all these little commas just to figure out what it was, right? I had to go past trillion. And so I assume it's quadrillion. I could be making it up, but whatever is, you know, you could say it's $50,000 trillion. Either way, you're not richer than Bezos saving a 401k. The real return of the matches, but between 1 and 2.5% typically.
Cool. So I want to talk a little bit about, I know that you do, you have some students, you coach them, and you're the anti-financial advisor. So what are a couple of things that you kind of teach your students or that you can share on the podcast if there's some, like just in general? I mean,
the big thing is getting people to realize that the stock market, mutual funds is not the way to go, right? It's looking outside of those things, buying real assets. And we look at all kinds of options. We really work as more of a strategist and a connector. So I don't offer any investments ourselves. We are not an investment company. We're more strategist consultants that say, hey, let's look at your plan, right? Let's look at your financial plan and let's just see what it would take to get you to become financially independent. Like what would get you out of the rat race, as Kiyosaki would call it, right? Where your passive income is more than your expenses, or even, and better yet, even just passive income to get you way beyond your expenses so that you feel completely free. So then you work because you want to, not because you have to. And so we strategize that game plan. We try to figure out what's the best type of options given your situation. You know, do we look at, you know, turnkey rentals? Do we look at syndications and like multifamily or whatever it might be? Do we look at, you know, doing things, you know, with short-term rentals? Are we doing short-term lending? You know, are we doing oil? Are we doing franchises? Like really looking at the options and saying, all right, for you, what's the right for you? Because the truth is, if somebody just gives you one option, you already know what they're selling, right?
Because
to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. For you, it's got to be something that's customized more to you.
So say I come in, you know, we have our meeting. What's kind of typical, like maybe top one or two besides the stock market, the, you know, like you said, the myth before in the stock market, but what's another maybe one or two things that most clients come in and they just don't, not that they don't understand, mm-hmm. but it's just been engraved in their brain, right? Since they were little kids, right? Like, or uh-huh. just through the system, right? Like, you know, like Men in Black, when they do the little flash, the little memory eraser. Like, what do you do, right? When you do that, boom, like, what would you remove from my brain? Or what's the most common question that people just don't understand, but have a challenge with?
The biggest thing is that accumulation mindset, right? Because financial advisors and even, you know, financial companies have taught us that we're supposed to squirrel away our money, right? Hoard it up, you know, save it up. Don't touch it. Don't even look at it, especially if the market's going down. Don't look at it, right? Let it go down. Just stay in long enough and it'll come back, right? But just keep plugging money away. In fact, if the market goes down, keep buying. They'll tell you to buy it down. They'll tell you to buy up. There's never a bad time to buy.
Sure.
And so it's always about saving and compounding. But the difference is we're trying to get you into an acceleration cash flow mindset, right? Which is how do we get that money really producing and working for you that actually leads to real income? So let me give you an example. Like in the traditional world, right? I was always telling people, compound and save this money for so many years. So let's just say you happen to be fortunate enough to save up $1 million in an IRA or a 401k, right? Well, the problem is even if you get to that number, it's not about the number you save up. It's about what it generates in income, right? Because say you get to that $1 million, which at a 7% return or whatever you might be getting in your 401k is not that great, right? It's going to take a lot to get to that point. But even if you get there, now an advisor like myself, a good one, they won't tell you to live on 4%. They'll say that's too much. You might run out of money. Instead, live on 2 or 3%. So say you live on 3% of $1 million. That's $30,000 a year before taxes, right? So now you're like paying tax on $30,000. Maybe you walk away with $24,000 a year, $2,000 a month after being a millionaire. Do you realize you're in poverty? Like you're an impoverished millionaire. You're a broke millionaire. It's just ridiculous. I even had a guy who was 53 years old, came to me. He actually had saved up $3 million in his IRAs and 401ks, right? He was packing that sucker in like crazy. He met with a financial advisor. The financial advisor said, good job. Keep going. You know, hopefully by 65, you'll hit your goals. Because his goal was an income goal of $500,000 a year. Well, for him to get to $500,000 a year, he would have to save $15 million to get that $500,000 and then pay taxes on it, right? So he's at $3 million. He's going to have to quintuple his money over the next 12 plus years, saving and hoping that the market doesn't crash or anything in the meantime. But take that same difference. Take his $3 million, right? That same $3 million, if he were to just get paid 10% a year, which is conservative, in my opinion, for any kind of real estate deals I'm looking at, like a 10% per year return, 10% a year on $3 million is $300,000 a year. That's way better than him trying to pull out $90,000 a year. Or even if you have $1 million, you want $30,000 a year and then pay tax on it, so you walk away with $2,000 a month, or do you have $100,000 a year instead of $2,000 a month, right? That's the difference. And so getting people to understand that it's not about what the so-called returns might be. It's really about the reality and what actually generates income. And once you get past that, once you get past the whole accumulation mentality, that's the way to go, which hasn't worked yet. And I always ask people, I'm like, look at evidence. That's what I did as a financial advisor. And that's why I had to leave. The evidence is, regardless of people accumulating and compounding their money, they still can't retire comfortably. That is the difference. That's why people need Social Security. That's why they're hoping for pensions still, even though those are disappearing like an endangered species, right? You got to be doing these things outside. And the crazy thing is that when you buy real assets, like real estate, for example, guess what? Real assets actually have value. There's something real. They're not just numbers on a piece of paper based on AI trading your money back and forth and you're hoping you make money. It's real stuff. It's real. It's not just this intangible, nebulous thing.
Yeah. And if you get creative with it too, you can get some really nice tax benefits on that.
Exactly. You keep that money, right? It's like, not only do you get paid that $100,000 a year from $1 million, but now you get to keep it all versus $30,000 and pay tax, right? It's just, you generally will come out with at least quadruple the cash flow. And that doesn't include the compounding that will probably grow faster than the stock market. You can, in many cases I see, people can end up becoming financially independent easily within 10 years. And in fact, that's my vision for the company, is getting at least 1,000 people independent by 2030.
Yeah. So like if you invest in real estate, right? So you invest in a multifamily building, you're going to get your return on your money, your tax structure is done properly. You're going to get some depreciation in the property. So you get a write-off some of the taxes, and hopefully you can pass, if you have extra, you can pass that along to your ordinary income or any other kind of income if your structure is right. And not just that, but the rents are going up. Hopefully it's appreciating. You don't want to count on that, but let's just say it does. Mm-hmm. And the mortgage is getting paid down. So like every day, every month, you're worth a little bit more, So it's pretty cool. I mean, I definitely like real estate. So you know what I pitch all the time, right? I pitch real estate.
I really think the two best asset classes are real estate and business, right? Because they have the best tax advantages. It's the one place the government won't tap into. I mean, we're even having talks right now that they're going to try to really tax the Roth IRAs, right? Especially if you make so much money or even prevent you from ever using a Roth IRA. And if you have too much net worth, they'll even make you pull out 50% of your Roth IRA, even if you're not 59 and a half, which means you have to pay a penalty on that money. I mean, it's just ridiculous they can do to those programs.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell me a little bit. I know you have, you don't invest just in real estate or you have different couple of things, but you and I kind of, before we started recording, talked about your checklist, right? And you have quite a bit of items on there that you have that you reserve for your clients, but you say you share maybe one or two. So tell me.
Yeah, for sure.
Which ones can you share?
Yeah. So we have a spreadsheet that we can go through that we have with our clients. It's like an 8-question type of checklist, right? And we're really trying to score it. We really want to see, is this the right investment for us? Because every person's different, because it's never about the investment, it's about the investor. Do you understand the deal? Do you know what you're getting into? Especially if you can manipulate the returns, is this a good deal for you or not? I even call it an opportunity questionnaire, because I want people to run business ideas through it too. Sure. If there's a business idea they're doing, hey, this could apply as well in your business, even if you don't invest in real estate or whatever. So a few of the questions. So I'll go with the top three. I'll even give you more than two. One is, I ask, how much control do you have over this investment? Right? How much control do you have in this investment? Because the biggest thing that where you lose freedom or you get more fear is if you feel like you're helpless, right? Do you have control? Even if you're investing in a syndication, like a multifamily syndication, could you and the other partners band together? If they stop paying out, could you band together and foreclose on them and get the property? Which would lead to like one of my other questions, is it secure by collateral, right? That's actually, I'll give you a fourth bonus, I guess.
All right.
Yeah. But is it secure by collateral? What is, or is it just unsecure, just random, you know, stuff? Like Bitcoin has no collateral, right? It has no real intangible value. So it's not going to score very well, because even though you can make money off of it, still, what's it based on? Nothing. You know, just, it's all based on whatever, however much hype is in the marketplace, right?
You can buy so digital artwork though.
Yeah, you could. I mean, again, it's always based on what humans value either. It.
You can't even touch it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Can't even touch the artwork. Yeah.
Exactly. You can have all your little stable coins. You can do whatever you want, but still, like, it's not going to pass some of those sniff tests, right? Here's one of the biggest questions I ask. This is the first question I ask, even before I ask any of these other investment questions. It's, I ask it of myself, is, other than the rate of return, why would I invest in this? So other than the return, why would I invest in it, right? Because it's so easy. And in fact, they've done psychological studies that the higher the return, the less research people do. The lower the return, the more they just nitpick the crap out of it, right? Like, you know, I sometimes will show people like how to like double dip on their investments, like using like infinite banking, using life insurance to get paid in two places at the same time, you know, things like that. And it's funny because that has guaranteed returns. People will sometimes like really look deep with a microscope on that, but then they'll ignore the thing that says, oh, they're going to make 20% IRR. Like, oh, okay, well, that sounds good. I like it. Yeah. Do it. You know, you get a question like, other than the rate of return, why would I do it? Like, if the returns didn't come in, would I still be okay with this? You know, I do this with business opportunities, especially, you know, because how many people tell you like, hey, you should join this business. Hey, you should join this network marketing company or this direct sales company or do this or that, right? Well, I have to ask myself, well, other than the possible money I'll make, why would I do it? Like, is there any passion tied to it or any interest beyond that? If not, it's just a distraction, right?
Sure.
And that's one thing that Warren Buffett told one of my friends in a private interview. He said, the difference between the successful and the ultra successful is that the ultra successful says no almost every time. And that's the key, is that we want to say no, right? We want to say yes to the right deals so that we can, you know, well, say the yes to the right ones, we have to say no to all the wrong ones too, right? You know, third point is how quickly and predictably is it generating cash flow? That's the third question, even though I gave you four, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the third one down the list. So one, you know, the one I always ask first is, other than rate of return, why would I invest in this? Two is, how much control do I have over this investment? Especially if things go wrong, can I do something to help pull it out? Or can I make the returns better? And then three is that how predictable is the cash flow, right? Is it come on a regular basis, or is this just purely, you know, speculation, right? I had a guy who had a business that he was working on, and I said, okay, cool. Well, when do you actually start thinking you'll make money on this? He said 2 years. And he was going to borrow money, by the way. So this is why it came up, because he's like, I'm going to borrow money, hard money, and I'm going to do this deal. Well, when do you make the money? In 2 years. Like, so you're gonna have to pay, and maybe in 2 years it might pay out. Yeah. And so I told him, I was like, what if we didn't do that? Let's put that on the back burner. Let's get some of the cash flows now, but we can work on this still. But you better, you know, let's find a way to more quickly monetize this. So I had him say, hey, is one of your competitors, could they actually finance and fund this deal? And then you become the person they hire. Maybe you get even a steady wage on it. Maybe they pay for the rights of the idea, but they get you to do that. He's like, no, it's gotta be us. I can't share it. It's mine, right? Seriously, 2 years went by. It still never produced. He borrowed that $30,000, lost it all. And even to this day, the funny thing is that competitor I mentioned, just 3 years later, created the same exact idea he had and did it better. So they didn't need him, you know, and that's the problem, is that now he has this business idea that now has already been used. It's actually similar to, by the way, Facebook timeline. This was 10 years ago before there was a Facebook timeline. He was trying to create something like that with pictures. Now even Facebook has it. So his idea is obsolete, you know, and that's the thing, is that you always want to try to do that investment, that one, especially if you can generate cash flow quickly, do it. What's the fastest way to the cash?
So quickly get some cash flow pretty quick. So it was, how much control do you have? Is it backed by collateral? Mm-hmm. How quickly can I cash flow? And not just the rate of return, but why would you want to do it, right? Is there you got a passion behind it, or do you know why? Is there a why behind you would do it? Well, that's pretty cool. I appreciate that, Chris, for kind of sharing part of your checklist. So tell me a little bit about your clients. Like, what do you What do you do? I mean, what do you look for, right? What's your typical client? Or just tell me, like, you know, how do you take applications for your program?
Yeah, I mean, we do two different things. Like, we got the consulting side, you know, with those kind of clients. And then, of course, we have like the infinite banking side, which, you know, we design those kind of policies to get the max ROI possible, right? On the consulting side, you know, with that one, it's more of just consulting fee that we charge. We don't, like, again, we don't sell anything based on commissions because we don't want to be commission-based. Sure. We want to be independent, separate from all that stuff. Be able to say, hey, based on where you are and what we see, here are some better options. I'll help you, you know, let's figure out and choose which ones are best for you, right? The typical client that I'm working with, I mean, they're really people that are looking for passive income, right? They want to be more passive investors. Active investors do okay. But active investors, I mean, the thing is, you're already, like, you got a business. You're trying to pump it out. Now, here's the caveat with active investors, right? Is that all active investors also need passive income. You can't just be, for example, I have a lot of friends that are wholesalers or flippers, right? That's a great business, but you are not an investor. You are a business owner. And if you don't think you're a business owner, you probably haven't been in that business long enough to know you are a business owner, right? You're always actively, you're always transactional. To get to the place of passive where you say, hey, even if my business shuts down, I'm safe because I've got multiple streams of passive income, then you need that. And that's kind of where we focus on is what are those more of those passive income streams? You know, whether we're doing it through real estate investing, you know, like even just buying your own property, like single family, duplexes, fourplexes. Are we going into multifamily syndications and doing things that way? Are we doing funds? Are we doing short-term lending? Are we investing in oil? Or are we doing franchises? Like whatever it might be, right? Land, you know, those kind of things, right? Like looking for ways to be able to make that money work for you. So again, you don't have to keep working for your money.
Oh, that's super cool. Yeah. So because I'm an active investor, right? But yeah, you know, if I don't work, I mean, I get passive money as well, but yeah. I definitely understand that. Definitely got to put some money in the passive side. And I think I'm going to do that. That'll be my 2021 goal is grab some money and throw it on the passive side where I don't have to really worry about it, you know, and it just produces a return, right? Well, I'm still working on my active, you know, business. I have active investing. So
totally. Well, that's a great thing is even if somebody's a wholesaler, right? I mean, what a great opportunity to find great deals, cherry pick the best ones and say, I'm going to keep that as a rental and rent it out, you know, and you might create a property management business. Again, that's not passive, right? That's still an active business, but still, if you can build your portfolio while you're also building your business and scaling that, awesome. That's the best way to go.
For sure. All right, Chris. So how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. I mean, you obviously mentioned the podcast. You can always find the Chris Miles Money Show on iTunes, YouTube, wherever, whatever platform you use, right? It's all over. Or you can even go to our website, moneyripples.com. And we got some great stuff on there on the website as well.
Cool. So now we're going to go back to the Naked Truth Roulette. I know you took it last time, but we're going to do it again. But all before right. I do that, look, man, who cooks dinner? Who's cooking dinner tonight? You got 8 kids. That's what I'm saying. I'm actually in my office upstairs. Uh-huh. And my wife's cooking some salmon right now. I can smell it. I'm like, I'm getting hungry. And who cooks dinner? Like, you guys take turns or what? Tell me the secrets there.
It's generally whoever's available. It's usually me, believe it or not. Like, although with lunch, if I'm like back to back with like these interviews and things like that, like she started the lunch, but then she went out to go chase chickens. And then I helped them finish the lunch and we had taco salad, right? So it just depends on whoever's available. But I would say at least 3 out of 4 times I'm the one cooking.
All right. So what's your go-to dinner when you got to make it like quick? Like, oh, shoot, I got to make dinner.
Oh, man, whatever I can end, you know, like really quick, it'd be like a smoothie, like a green smoothie or something, right? Like super fast. Oh, that's cool. But usually like I'm going to go probably like the taco salad route, you know, like, or something like that, or something like a quesadilla, you know, something that's kind of easy that way.
Cool. Awesome. I can cook a pretty good bowl of cereal. So. I mean, it's pretty.
It gets pretty hot, you know.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so I'm going to bring up the Naked Truth Roulette, and we're going to ask you. Hopefully, we don't get any duplicate questions, but we will skip them. Chris Miles, let's get you on the. I added a couple of other questions in here, so let's see what we got.
Exciting.
First question. All right, if you could pick another time to live in, when would it be? Future or past?
Ooh. Oh man. Dang it. I'm kind of a wuss. So I don't think I'd go very far in the past. You know, I wouldn't mind living back in the 70s and 80s again though. You know, like I wouldn't mind going back to that time because you know, I miss the time where we could send our kids out and ride bicycles and we don't have to worry about some creeper, you know, out there and things like that. Like I remember as a kid growing up in the 80s, like we'd ride bicycles till dark, you know, go play sports till forever. And those are good times, even though there's crazy stuff in the world, even back then, I think I'd go back to like the 70s or 80s again.
Yeah. That was fun. Remember summers would go so slow.
Oh yeah. Right. Oh, I loved it.
And you know, I tell my kids, guys, there was cartoons on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like there was no cartoons 24 hours a day. It was just Saturday morning, you know, and maybe during the week, maybe like 30 minutes in the morning before school. But anyways, all right, let's roll. Let's go with question number two. That was a good answer. Good answer. Let's go. Let's go. Question number two. All right. What's the most embarrassing, talking about the 70s and 80s. What is the most embarrassing thing you ever worn?
Yeah. Actually, that would probably be it, actually. I mean, I was a little kid, but I remember 5 years old, I was in kindergarten, right? So this would be like 1982 or right around there in kindergarten. And we're in PE. I didn't want to interrupt the teacher. I was afraid to get in trouble. So I peed my pants, right? So, I mean, this time about embarrassing moment with embarrassing clothing.
It's the naked truth, Chris.
Naked truth, right? So I peed my pants. They sent me to the office. They gave me whatever was in, I'm guessing, you know, in the lost and found, which were these ugly, like, I don't even know how to describe the color, but it was definitely plaid, but it was like these ugly plaid pants, like old man, grandpa type pants, you know, that they had in kids. And so I had to wear that the rest of the day and wear it home. And that has been burned into my brain. It's like, I never want to wear that.
There, man. It's never going to go away. All right, man. Well, thank you for sharing that. You're 5 years old. And you wore some lost and found pants. Yeah. All right. I don't know. I think that's and that wasn't your choice though, right? It wasn't your choice.
Definitely not my choice. Yeah,
right. Let's go. Last question for Chris. Here we go. Let's go. Thank you for the last answer. All right. I think it's gonna be a good one if it stops right here. Should. Ooh. All right. What was your favorite cartoon as a kid?
It was between He-Man and Voltron.
Oh yeah, He-Man. You can't go wrong with He-Man.
Oh yeah. He-Man, those are definitely my favorites. Sure. Looking at them now, I'm like, man, they were kind of boring. But back then, they were super exciting, right?
They were the best. Well, Chris, I appreciate you answering these questions again. You survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
I love it.
All right. Thanks again for being on the show, and appreciate. And guys, reach out to Chris if you have any questions. Check out his podcast. He's got a lot of episodes. I was scrolling on through some of the episodes and a lot of information there. If you guys have any questions on investing or just anything about his business, please reach out. He's a great guest and I appreciate him being on the show. Thanks again.
Thanks. Such a pleasure.
I am Javier Hinojo. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback, not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.